Okay, the House General Government Committee will return to order. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2892. Now, you'll notice, committee, you've got a number of amendments before you. The amendments that are salient at this point are the dash ones, the dash twos, the dash sixes, and the dash eights. And I'll have Kara explain the dash... Forget it.
Forget the dash ones.
Forget the dash ones, the ones that are salient at this point, dash two, dash six, and dash eight. Kara, if you would explain to the committee the dash twos, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members at your place, you have a hand engrossed dash two that has Representative Wilson's name at the top.
Okay.
Everybody got that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is talking about the alcohol content of beer. The hand engrossed amendment would change it to 6% from 5 7/10%.
Everybody follow that?
Yes.
All right. How about the dash sixes?
Dash six amendments should be in your file. They're from OLCC and others. They're purely technical. Change some was's to is's and add cider to a whole bunch of places where there's a reference to wine. And...
time out. Representative Atkinson.
So we're adding wine with cider?
We'll have OLCC.
Are we going to have somebody talk about
that? I'll have OLCC do that.
Okay.
All right, and the dash eights, please.
The dash eights are from the Restaurant Association. They have to do with the video lottery issue, allowing the Lottery Commission, the director is here to explain this if she'd like to make rules to determine whether or not an establishment is okay to have video lottery. It also deals with the presence of minors issue.
All right, thank you.
I think I got it.
Okay, I'd like to discuss the dash twos. These are the hand engrossed amendments that you have. You have them with my name on them. And I think you all have those. Let me ask our representatives from Anheuser-Busch and Miller to come forward, if you would. Gentlemen, would you mind?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Powell, representing Miller Brewing Company.
Bill Linden, representing Anheuser-Busch.
Richard Kosasan with Coors and Tag Along.
All right. Thank you very much. I've forwarded these dash twos because I understand from your previous testimony and that you've got a difficulty with a segment of your product line that has to be relabeled for shipment to Oregon because of the 5.7% limitation. Could you recapture that testimony for us for just a moment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Oregon, in my knowledge, is one of just several states that has a similar requirement in law of a alcohol volume percentage cap under which you can or can't call a certain malt beverage product a beer. What that requires a manufacturer to do is to provide separate labeling in their manufacturing plant to produce that product. And since it's our feeling that a 5.7% standard really isn't serving any very clear public policy, that the additional expense and work of having to do special labeling here is such that this issue deserves some study. And there really are two options for you. One is to repeal it. The other would be to raise it so that you have it at a level where it's not affecting as many malt beverage products from diverse manufacturers as it currently is.
Thank you. Lenny.
Mr. Chairman, John Powell with Miller again. And to... maybe expand on that testimony just briefly. There are three states, California, Oregon, and Texas, according to the information I had, and this was compiled in 1994, and the commission realized that every state's alcohol laws are different, and in some cases, extremely different. In some cases, beer over a certain alcohol content has to be sold through liquor stores. There's all kinds of different methodologies of liquor laws. Three states, California, Oregon, and Texas, have this particular law, which says you can't call a product a beer, can't call beer beer, if it's above a certain alcohol content level. When this was changed back in 95 session, I believe, we went to 5.7 to accommodate one product, I think. And then the ice beers came out, and that's what has produced this variance. At the time, the chairperson of the, or the administrator of the OLCC, who happens to be in this room, is the lottery director today. she called me on the phone and said, would you mind if we just move that to 6 for the ease of administrative purposes? But because of discussions similar to the ones we've had in here, I said, yikes. It's been confusing. This thing's moving, and I think it could undo it if we go back and go to 6. That's why it's not 6 day. I wish I would have said, come on down at that time. But it as the representative Ansel Bush said, it just really creates a problem when you're producing out of one brewery for, say, 3 states, and in 2 of those states you call this product a beer, and in Oregon you can't. So you have to stop the lines and relabel and make a separate run for that. Then if the weather spikes in Oregon and there's larger demand than normal, you cannot use a product even though it's in your warehouse because the label is incorrect. So there are all kinds of those types of issues, and as has been spoken, the public purpose for this is hard to find. And that's why our original amendment just took away this requirement. We would be happy with an increase, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. As most of you know, I am somewhat conservative by nature, and I didn't feel comfortable with the total removal of an alcohol percentage in this bill. So in talking with these gentlemen and talking with some of you, I feel comfortable in moving it for the aforementioned purposes to 6%, hence the dash twos. Representative Harper.
Why not 7? Where'd 6 come from?
6.5.
What we're talking about.
Well, I guess why not 30 is my real question.
Exactly. Yeah, that the legitimate question. I felt that I would be personally comfortable as committee chair to move it to the point that would take care of their immediate difficulty in marketing.
In marketing?
Could I ask a question?
Well, that's what it is.
I'd like to ask a question.
Representative Thompson.
Above the 6, are there other products that you're producing that 6 affects? I mean, are we looking at coming back next time at 6.5 or?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thompson, I couldn't say that would not occur because it has. In 1994, the 3 states that were mentioned all had 4%. Laws, and it has gradually moved up from there, and so I can't say we would not, but I know a deal when I see one, I won't argue with that deal.
Anyone else? All right, I'd like to since these are conceptual amendments here, my dash twos, then I would move to suspend the rules for the purpose of adopting conceptual amendments. Are there any objections?
No.
Apparently that's no. All right. I move the dash two amendments be amended by changing 7 to 6 on lines 10 and 18. Is there any discussion? Any objection? No objection? Seeing no. That motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I'd like to move the adoption of the amended dash two amendments. Any discussion? Right. Clerk, call the roll, please.
Atkinson?
Aye.
Jack?
Aye.
Goldman?
Yes.
Deckard?
Yes.
Harper?
Aye.
Jar?
Aye.
Sunseri? Thompson?
Yes.
Wilson?
Aye. All right. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, we have a technical question for you.
Right.
Was it appropriate for you to move the dash two, or should one of us have moved it? Does it matter?
Doesn't matter. Okay, he can move it.
Yes.
He's the chair. You just didn't want to have to come back and do this again.
Yeah.
Your staff really hopes you don't have to either.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Okay, let's talk about the Dash 6 amendments now, technical amendments from OLCC. And Barb, if we could have you and anyone you would choose to pull up with yourself.
Good afternoon, committee members. For the record, Barb Hutchison with Oregon Liquor Commission, and I'm really going to turn this over to Bette Wooster and Chris Hansen, who will be able to answer your technical questions far better than myself. But I would like for the committee to know that Pam Erickson was really sorry not to be here this afternoon, but she had a prior commitment speaking to Leadership Oregon. So she has sent the best next, and we'll just turn it over to your questions for these folks, and we'll try to move through these quickly.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your attendance today, and I guess if anybody's like me here, we would ask, what's the deal on cider?
Chairman Wilson, members of the committee, for the record, Chris Hansen with the Regulatory Program of the Liquor Commission. Currently, licensing and liquor regulation operates with cider as a subcategory of wine. As part of these amendments, we decided we wanted to put a specific definition of wine in Chapter 471. In doing so, we forgot to notice that we would also have to add a definition, a separate definition of cider. The amendments at Dash 6 are take care of that technical oversight. It will enable people who currently can deal in cider to continue doing so if this bill is enacted.
Thank you. Any questions about cider from the committee?
Is there an alcoholic content in cider?
My question.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, 5.7.
5.1.
Go ahead. Chairman, sorry, I'm hard to get used to. The Legislative Assembly has set the alcoholic content of cider at 10%. Currently, that's defined in ORS Chapter 473. Which is the chapter we use for the privilege tax.
I don't want to know what you're doing.
No kidding, that explains a lot.
Any further questions? Well, all right, I guess that takes care of the Dash 6s. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Bowman.
I move the Dash 6 amendments into House Bill 2892.
Representative Bowman moves the Dash 6 amendments into House Bill 2892. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Deckard.
Now, do we need anything on free beer? I hear that becoming a problem.
How was that out there, Representative Deckard?
Moving on.
Just kidding. I know you wouldn't do that. Any further discussion?
Wait a minute. I thought that we had a note passed, I think, last week. There were some members of the committee that wanted to have the OLCC give this our committee a beer license.
Not on my watch.
No.
All right, clerk, call the roll, please.
Atkinson?
Aye.
Beck?
Aye.
Yeah.
Bowman?
Yes.
Deckard?
Yes.
Harper?
Aye.
Jar?
Aye.
Sinceri? Thompson?
Yes.
Wilson.
Aye. Motion carries. Let's move to the Dash 8 amendments. And Kara, would you talk about those once again?
Sure. Chair members, this is the video lottery issue. I'm trying to make sure that video lottery doesn't run rampant with all these new establishments. They can get this full on-premises license. I don't know if lottery wants to come up and say they're okay. Restaurant people are all nodding, going, yeah, we like this. Everybody's happy.
Everybody's happy. Mike, would you want to come up and say anything? Feel free to do that.
He said, Sharon's about to move this thing.
Yeah. Mike just wants to say a few words.
Just a very few. Chair Wilson, members of the committee, my name is Mike McCallum with the Oregon Restaurant Association. This amendment is to allay any concerns that, in fact, this bill might expand the opportunity for video lottery terminals beyond what is currently present. It gives the Lottery Commission authority by rule to exactly emulate what they have today in terms of placement requirements. That's what the amendment does.
All right, thank you. Questions? Representative Starr,
Chair?
You had a question about that last time, and I just wanted to make sure that these met your expectations.
Yes.
Okay.
I would move the -8 amendments to House Bill 2892.
Representative Starr moves the -8 amendments into House Bill 2892. Any discussion?
Well, you swear that they can't put anything to do with minimum wage in this bill.
I was wondering if this had something to do with smoking.
$5.7.
No promises, I'm sure. All right, clerk, call the roll, please.
Atkinson?
Yes.
Deck?
Aye.
Bowman?
Yes.
Deckard?
Yes.
Harper?
Aye.
Jarr?
Aye.
Sunseri? Thompson?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes. Motion carries. All right, we'll take a motion on the bill, and it has a subsequent referral.
Yeah.
Time out.
Pardon me? You wanted to add one to revenue.
Yes. So you have
to... Mr. Chair, members, this has a big revenue impact, and the Chair of Revenue is willing to look at the bill because it does have a pretty significant revenue impact. So whoever makes the motion should... make the motion, do pass as amended, and be referred to the Committee on Revenue.
All right. And we'll entertain the motion. Representative Beck.
I move House Bill 2892 as amended to the Revenue Committee.
To the floor.
To the floor. The do pass recommendation as amended
and be referred
to the Committee on Revenue.
Thank you. Representative Beck has made a very fine motion.
And you were the reading clerk.
Is there any discussion?
Not a chance.
Clerk, call the roll, please.
Atkinson?
Yes.
Beck?
Yes.
Bowman?
Yes.
Deckard?
Yes.
Harper?
Aye.
Jarr?
Aye.
Sunseri? Thompson?
Yes.
Wilson?
Aye. Motion carries, and thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I'm going to carry.
We got one more.
Yes, we do. Don't go away.
Going to revenue.
Oh,
okay. All right, we will close the work session on House Bill 2892, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2574. And Representative Gardner will get things going.
The dash sevens on that one.
Thanks, Ryan. Welcome, Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dan Gardner, State Representative from House District 13. And House Bill 2574, the -2 amendments you should have before you, simply ask that upon entering into a contract at a public works project, that a contractor demonstrate that they have a drug testing program in place. I introduced this bill for the Oregon Construction Building Trades Council because I believe in a drug-free workplace policy, and that when not in the legislature, I do work in the construction industry. And I guess basically, to put it very simply, I have a wife and two children. I like going home to them. I like making sure that accidents don't happen in the workplace, and I believe this is a large step toward it. You will note that I gave you some Department of Administrative Services policy that says that the state has a policy toward a zero tolerance toward drugs in the workplace, and I believe as a legislature we can help to promote that policy with passage of this bill.
Thank you. Representative Thompson.
I can see the drug testing, but alcohol is a legal substance, and to test positive, what do you...
The dash two amendments delete alcohol, Representative Thompson.
Oh, okay.
I wholeheartedly agree with you.
Yeah.
Okay. What are we doing after that last committee?
No, for the record, we had Miller, Anheuser, and Coors, and we just let them go. I mean, so much I could work with there. So much.
Well, I was worried. I liked your line, though.
I wanted them to argue over taste great, less filling. So much.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hi, Representative Gardner. On line 15, demonstrate. What does that mean?
That's deleted, too.
Oh, no. You're demonstrating.
Oh, you're right.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bowman, I believe that what that means is that they show with the contract that they have some form of a drug testing policy in place.
And so maybe, if I could follow up, Mr. Chair, maybe it should say provide a copy of your drug-free workplace policy or something of that sort.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bowman, I believe demonstrate would be showing a copy of that you have a policy.
Fine.
Representative Atkinson.
Representative Gardner, or whoever would like to answer this. It requires public contracts to demonstrate that they have tested. Is there anything, or is there, I haven't had a chance to really gut this, but my only real question is there any provision that would say how they test them? I mean, is it okay that if it's random, if it's every so many days? I mean, do you have any?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Atkinson, if I may, I believe that we left the language the way it is so that there can be an administrative rule process so that they can develop those through the interim so that they can set that up.
Thank you. I wanted to ask about current law, at least current practice, what's going on here. Union shops versus open shop contractors here. Are both of you under the same yoke, or is it unequal now regarding drug policy?
Well, I believe I'd leave that for others to speak to. Having never worked for a non-union shop, I wouldn't know what their policies are. Having worked for a union shop, Mr. Chair, I know that our policy is that there's a random drug testing program, and that occasionally I will be given a notice to go for a test, and that it's a rather, you know, kind of secretive process that, you know, no one knows about it. That my testing then goes back to through the program. And then there is other processes in place for those who do fail the test to go through counseling, and upon second failure, I believe that they go into a lockdown facility for in-house help on those areas. There is quite an extensive process.
Okay. Very good. Gentlemen?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bob Shiprack, Oregon Building Trades. To my far left is Mr. Chris Davis. He's a field agent for the Cement Masons Union Local 555, who asked me to introduce the bill amongst other of my affiliates. Now, before I get into it, I'm going to be brief this afternoon to answer the chair's question. Both union and open shop contractors currently do drug testing. What really broke this issue open was in the 80s, the federal government required drug testing of people involved in interstate commerce, so your truck drivers and for construction, anybody involved in pipeline work, a lot of that. Then a lot of the private owners began requesting that contractors on their site have a drug plan, and this is the kind of the last step is... That's why we put the bill in. If everyone else is doing it, why shouldn't government require that? And I'll go into my testimony. First of all, I worked on this issue many years ago, and if someone would have told me today I'd be sitting here promoting drug testing in the workplace, I'm not sure I'd believe it. But that shows you how far this issue has evolved from the early 80s when it first became an issue because of the federal law and the requests of private owners. The industry, both union and open shop, have moved into the area. You've got a copy there. I just grabbed one. I got a lot in my office, but this was one of the first and most popular. This is, and I checked with AGC. It's their policy, but I just grabbed this one. This gives you an idea of what a drug policy is. And this has been in effect, as you'll see, since 1990, and in fact has been amended lately to go to a random testing such as electricians use. And I think Mr. Davis's people now do that. It's actually computer generated. One of the problems, there's a few reasons why we wanted to introduce this. Again, it's an industry issue, not a union, non-union. Our industry has an awful public image, Mr. Chairman, both in the public and, unfortunately, oftentimes in the legislature. Some people think that the main requirement for being a construction worker is a prison record, and we constantly are fighting that image. Frankly, we're taking a lot of people with college degrees, freed anywhere from 3 to 5 year apprenticeship or schooling in order to become accomplished craft people. I couldn't believe a statistic I heard, if you can imagine this. A few years back, there was a national survey done of careers by high school seniors, and they took 250 careers, jobs, if you wish, and asked these high school seniors to rank them. Out of 250 careers, construction worker came out 249. We were right ahead of migrant farm workers. And so constantly, even today, we're getting requests from people or a perception that this is an industry fraught with drugs. There have been problems. There's no question about it. It's getting cleaned up. We still got somewhere to go. But this would help with that image problem that I think we have. Obviously, there are considerations about safety and costs. Obviously, any injuries or workers' compensation related drives up those costs. Then the other problem is that a perception, I think, of the industry that because of the large private owners, construction owners require drug testing before these contractors go on the project, there's a perception that the people who don't want to quit using drugs appear to go toward the public works sector where there's not the pressure by the owner to have drug testing. A perception, I can't quantify it, but it's something that we see and we're guessing. I guess that's the bottom line question. When so much of the private sector is demanding this, why not the public owners? The state of Oregon is a large construction owner and should join the rest of the construction owners in supporting this. And I think last but not least, it sends a huge policy statement from this legislature to the public at large. We all talk about trying to stem the tide of drugs and all this and children and everything else, but on our own construction work, we don't do anything about it. This bill would say at least you're going to show us a plan that's in place and some assurance that at least the people working on publicly funded construction jobs have went through some kind of a drug test at one time or another and have an opportunity for rehabilitation if it's necessary. I was specifically vague, and Sean Miller's amendments kind of, we all hit it. Because there are so many different types of plans, we deliberately left the language that they demonstrate that they have one, because electricians, cement masons have one type, AGC for some employees have different ones. We've got federal plan, so we didn't want to restrict people's. This is something that needs to be worked out between employers and employees. If they can come up with a reasonable, effective program, then so much the better.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Anything to add?
Yes. Chairman, Mr. The committee, I have a prepared statement here. I'll go ahead and defer from it. If you want to read it later, that's fine. This is not a union, non-union issue. I'd like to go ahead and point that out specifically right now. As I travel up and down through the state of Oregon, as I talk with contractors, they hit me with one major issue, and that is getting qualified help that shows up that doesn't have a drug problem. And we have a core group of people in this state, and they focus on prevailing wage work because it pays good wages. And these wage, they're not looking for fringe benefit programs. They're not looking for anything else. They're looking for dollars. And they seek out prevailing wage work. They look for the short-term contract. They work on it, like in my trade, short-term basis, but they're looking for the highest income possible. The problem is, you take, for example, in the private work sector, if a business owner decides he wants to have his own policy. He can control his own workplace because he owns that workplace. When you start into construction, you might have 20 contractors and 100 different employees all on one project. And if you don't have one uniform code over that whole project, a contractor can go ahead and say, I have a drug-free work program. My people are drug-free, but 2 feet from him is somebody who's under the influence. So he still has the same exposure, irregardless. And that's what we're asking for today, is so we have a uniform policy. Son, go ahead.
No, go ahead. We've got till 3:20 today.
Okay. So. Asking for that uniform policy. We do have other things associated. This is basically one of the main criteria about this is safety. Safety, I mean, when we talk construction, we talk forklifts, trucks, saws. We have one of the highest risk exposures of any occupation in the state of Oregon. And we say, like I said, can we say drugs are a problem? As a field rep, I know because I have problems within my own. So I mean, we're not unique, okay, in this statement. So, but we have things like theft, absenteeism, and accidents that all are caused by drug abuse. And I don't think that the taxpayers of Oregon should have to tolerate those kind of things on their projects that are funded with their tax dollars. The last thing I basically had to say was basically we've already established these areas as drug-free zones the minute they're completed. We're talking about our schools with our children. We're talking about our public libraries, our government offices. And when we put employees in those, we tell them we will not tolerate drugs. Then we also have, well, I think for a good example, we have a school in Grants Pass that was being built. While the school was going on, we were building part of the school. So it would seem ironic that we would not have a drug-free policy for those contractors working while we had our children present. So anyhow, that's about all I have to say. Have any questions?
Thank you. Yeah. Questions? All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate that. We've got 4 minutes, and I want to call Dugan Petty up here from DAS. And Dugan, I'm not going to, you know, if you've got more than 3 minutes worth, we'll continue this to another time and let you come back and finish it. But I do want you to get started.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dugan Petty. I am the DAS purchasing manager for DAS TPPS. This bill requires parties to public contracts with public agencies to have drug and alcohol testing programs. DAS has three concerns with the bill. First off, it requires a drug and alcohol testing program, or as the DAS 2 amendment, it requires a drug testing program for employees of every party to a public contract. So as written, it's not just limited to public improvement contracts, but it would involve a contract where it would be a disposal of state property. The people receiving it, party to the contract, their employees would have to have a program in place. It would involve supplier contracts. It would involve contracts for the sale of real property, for example. So it is very broad in scope as currently written, and even with the DASH 2 amendment, broad in scope.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. May I ask a question here?
Go ahead.
We move on. Mr. Petty, I'm not reading all that into this bill. I thought that the contract that we would send out that people would bid on would simply have a statement in there that says you need to let us know what your drug testing policy is. Are you reading this to say that we as a public agency would be required to test all these people?
Through the chair, Representative Bowman, not that public agencies would be required to test them, but that all public contracts would be subject, as is currently written, to this provision. This provision is not written to limit only to public improvement contracts, but would apply to any contractor with a public agency. So they would have to have a program in place for alcohol or for drug testing.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Go ahead.
I'll be very quick.
All right.
Second two areas of concern is that there is some cost associated with this. And if the intent of the legislature is to pass the bill that only relates to public improvement, then that narrows it to public improvement. But if it's all contracts, there is some significant cost associated with having drug testing programs established. We did an initial model for a 10-employee program with drug and alcohol testing and rehabilitation, and we were estimating in the neighborhood of $2,000 a year. Now, with the removal of alcohol testing and rehabilitation. That's probably closer to 500 a year for a 10 person program. And if you have 50 employees, we modeled one out that would be for just drug testing at the rate that the state has under its contract, which is $30 a test for a 50 employee program. That would be in the neighborhood of $2,500 a year. So there is some cost that could come back and would come back to the public agency if they're paying for this under contract. Our third point is that I think intentionally the bill does not define what constitutes a drug and alcohol test. DAS would manage that by coming up with a definition, and we would determine before we awarded a bid for contracts that we were awarding bids on that the contractor had a program in place. We would deal with it the same as we do insurance. We would take a look at the certification of their program, and if they had it in place, then we would go ahead and make an award. If they didn't have one in place, we wouldn't make an award to them. The question here that will be difficult for us is establishing what constitutes the minimum acceptable level of a drug testing program.
Okay, if I can put a halt to your testimony here for a moment, I'd like to bring you back when we come back and revisit this very shortly. Okay, could I do that?
Thank you, Mr.
All right, thank you. I'd like to have Laird Cusack come up. I'm going to give Laird about 60 seconds here. Obviously, we're not going to work this today, but I do want to, Mr. Cusack, if you would just make kind of a broad 60-second statement, and if we need to get you back again, if you'd like to come back, you'll be more than welcome when we do bring this back. Okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman Wilson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Laird Cusack. I'm Labor Relations Manager for Associated General Contractors. The association supports this bill for you today. A drug testing program is critical for a to promote a safe work environment for construction workers. And right now, all of our union contractors and many of our open shop contractors have drug testing programs in place. The way this bill is written, that would allow these contractors to continue with their current program without unnecessarily requiring them to change their current business practices. So it allows the legislature to set a policy while allowing our members to continue their own individual business practices. And so we support it.
Very good. Thank you.
5 seconds.
Very much. Very good. All right. Sean Miller, sorry, but I know you'll forgive me for that. So. All right. Sounds good. Thank you. We'll adjourn House Bill 2574 and
you don't want to
adjourn the meeting, I should say.
You don't want to owe Sean anything. That's